if God is all pervading, he's everywhere, within us, without us, in space, air, then the student wants to know, why can't I see him? Where is he? You say he's everywhere, show me where's God. You say you can't be thought of, can't be described, then how am I to know him? How am I to reach him? And then last week we said he's the non-doer. If he's the non-doer, he doesn't do anything, then who created this world and who is sustaining it? And what use is he if he's a non-doer? Then why should we pray to somebody who doesn't do anything? I want a God who helps me, who can do anything. Not only that, if you say he is in the good and the bad, then in the bad he must be suffering. You know, if he's in Hitler, he must be suffering and must have gone to hell. And then if he is in Shankaracharya or Swami Chinmayananda, then maybe he's somewhere in heaven. So is he miserable in the bad or is he happy in the good? All these questions we ask because the Upanishads tell us he's unaffected, he's uncontaminated. He's untouched. So he said, is he like a rock, you know, that is sitting there, whether rain falls on it or snow falls on it or mud falls on it, it remains unaffected? Or is that what the kind of God that the Upanishads are talking about? And in the beginning, always people have such questions because we are used to thinking of God with a form, you know, who is loving and all. And now we hear about this formless entity that is all pervading, that is untouched, unaffected. And the Upanishads repeatedly tell us that's what the true nature of the Lord is. All these beautiful forms that we see are an expression of that infinite Brahman. So what is his true nature and how am I to know him? That is the student question. And Sri Krishna very beautifully will answer that today in verse number 32 and 33. So we'll try to cover them today. So chapter 13, verse number 32. Anadityat nirgunatvat vat nirgunatvat paramatma yam avyayah sharirasthopi kaunteya na karoti na lip. Anadityat means because of beginninglessness. It is beginninglessness. It is without beginning. Here I have kind of summarized the verse. It is beginningless and nirgunatvat. And because it has no gunas, it has no qualities, no gunas, it is not a substance. Paramatma, this Supreme Self, is imperishable. Avyayaha, sharirasthopi kaunteya. Sharirastha means it is stationed in the body. In all bodies, it is stationed in all plants, birds, animals, fish, humans. It is stationed. Stha means stationed. Api count, like you are all chairastha. At this moment, you are chairastha. You are stationed in the chair. So, Paramatma is Sharirastha Api Kaunteya. Kaunteya is one of Arjuna's names. When Krishna has a lot of love for Arjuna, he calls him Kaunteya. Because Kunti, who is Arjuna's mother, that's why the person is known by Kaunteya. That means Kunti's son. And Kunti was very dear to Krishna. She used to consider Krishna like her brother. And she used to fight with him and even scold him and get upset with him. So she was very close. So when he develops a lot of love for the student, he calls him Kaunteya. Also when he says Kaunteya means, I love your mother so much and you are very dear to me. So what I am telling you is true. I'm not going to say something that will fool you or bluff you. So when that he's saying it's coming from my heart, it is something I really believe. So that's why Kaunteya is one of the very beautiful names of Arjuna. So he says, O Arjuna, sharirasthapi, even though, api means even though it is stationed in the body, na karoti na lipyate, does not do anything, and is na karoti and na lipyate, is not tainted, is not contaminated by anything. Neither acts nor it is tainted or contaminated. So I have just a few points that we can talk about. When they say beginningless, means there is no beginning. God, there was never a time that God never was. God was always there. They say, when was he born? We don't know when he was born. Then a Catholic will ask, was God baptized? You know, that is a question. They say, well, he was not baptized. Oh, if he's not baptized, then he goes to hell. You know, that is their belief. So, but he can't, because there was no one to baptize him. Unfortunately, he was alone by himself. And so there was no priest or no church to baptize him. So God is not baptized. So he is the beginningless. He's there before time, even before time started, before there was space, there was nothing. There was no time, there was no space, there was no air, water, earth. There was nothing. The consciousness alone was, and he was all pervading everything, infinite, on and on and on. And then the idea came into the law, into the mind of the Lord, that let me become many. That's what the Bhagavad says, that may I become many. And he had this creative ability, so he decided to create this most beautiful world of flowers, plants, birds, fish, these planets all moving in perfect harmony, and the earth rotating around the sun and the moon, and all this beautiful, you know, scenes and everything he created. And miles and miles and billions and trillions of miles of space. And he is even beyond extant space. So everything he created, so he is the beginning of everything. Everything started from the Lord. Even the Bible says that God alone was, and in 6 days he created the world. And on Sunday, the seventh day, he rested. So that's why they say he is beginningless. Then the second point, what Krishna is trying to do, that even though this truth, the Lord, is indescribable, he's using words from the Upanishads and from the higher teachings of Sanskrit to make this concept a little bit clear for us. So he says, nirgunatvat. Guna means qualities. Guna also means, you know, sattva, rajas and tamas. You know, the sattva is the purity, rajas is the activity, and tamas is laziness. So the Lord has no qualities, has no properties. That means he does not have sattva or rajas or tamas. He's not happy or unhappy. You know, he's not black or white. He's not short or tall. He's not big or small. You cannot say, even though in the Upanishad he says, in the Kathopanishad, anoraniyam ahameva tadvan mahanaham vishvaham vichitram. He says, I am smaller than the smallest, and then bigger than the biggest. So he's smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest. So he said, how can you be both? In fact, he is beyond words, but all these qualities help us to understand. So when we mean smaller than the smallest, means he's even subtler than the atom, even subtler than the subatomic particle. He's even bigger than space. He even extends beyond that. Everything, in fact, is contained in that. Also, when they say that it has no qualities, that means anything that has a quality is destructible. If it has qualities, if it has gunas, then it will change. Then it was created. If it has, you know, fragrance, okay, the flower has fragrance. So the flower for a while was created, has this quality of fragrance, has the quality of color, and then will perish. So anything that has a form, that has properties, that has qualities, if cold, okay, ice is cold, after a while it will become room temperature. Steam is hot, it will cool down. So anything that has properties, that has qualities, that has a description, is created and will perish. Anything that you can describe, thunder, lightning, space, building, you know, tree, house, anything that you can describe, anything that you can talk about, anything that you can think about, has qualities, has properties. Like, you know, chemistry is the science of properties. So it talks about the properties of iron, the properties of carbon, the properties of hydrogen, nitrogen. So the Lord has none of those properties, has none of those qualities. You cannot say he is beautiful or he's ugly or he's short or he's tall. None of, nothing applies to him. He's beyond all qualities, beyond all disc. They are all contained in him. You know, that's why when we see the form of Lord Krishna, or you can look at Saraswati and Mother Lakshmi, you see these beautiful forms, that is the Lord expressing as. But the Lord himself, the Brahman, that infinite subtle consciousness that is all-pervading, is formless, beginningless, qualityless, has no qualities. All qualities are manifestations or creations of Prakriti, of nature, which is the creator, or you can say Brahmaji or Ishwara. Ishwara is the total consciousness, or Brahman, when it identifies with the total vastness of the whole universe, it becomes Ishwara or the creator, and that Ishwara becomes then Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, becomes the creator, sustainer and destroyer. So that is that one Brahman, one consciousness appearing as all these other forms, but itself is not conditioned by any of them. Even Brahma or Vishnu or Mahesh, none of them can condition, even Jesus or whatever you may say, cannot condition or affect that, because that is beyond all of them. So it has no form, it has no shape, it has no color, no description, it is not a substance. As opposed to that, the reason the Lord is telling us, because we are in our mind only can think of finite objects. You know, whenever I think, I can only think of finite objects. Anything you look in this world is finite, is destructible, is changing, never permanent. Everything is born, created, destroyed. Born, created, destroyed. Talking about destroyed, this man had a 16-year-old son, so he taught him how to drive and then bought him a brand new car. And then a month later, he calls the car dealer. He says, you know, you sold me this new car a month ago. He says, yeah. He says, is it under warranty? He says, yep, 12-month warranty. He said, anything that breaks, you will replace? He said, yes, sir. Anything that breaks, we will replace. He said, okay, I need a new garage. So everything here, including his garage, is destructible. But that consciousness is always there, permanent, indestructible, and it cannot be bound, it cannot be conditioned, it cannot be. So the example they give is that the gross cannot bind the subtle, the gross cannot condition the subtle. So what we mean by gross is like the ice is gross, and then water is subtler than ice. You know, ice melts, it becomes water, then water evaporates, becomes steam, and then steam is the subtlest. So water, ice, water and steam, and or whatever, the water vapor, and then it merges. So how can we, the best example they give is, suppose there is a person in prison. You know, the poet says, you know, iron bars do not make a prison, and, you know, walls cannot. So the person may be, you know, in the prison, but his thoughts cannot condition his thoughts. If he wants to think about his, you know, his children, his beloved ones, his thoughts can go out. And same thing, the beloved ones, if they want to think about their dear one who happens to be in the prison, their thoughts can go. So the thoughts, being subtler than the gross, cannot be conditioned, cannot be held. Like right now, you are sitting here, and you could think about your children or about your parents. Please don't do that, because then you won't pay attention to what I'm saying. But you can. You know, I cannot stop you. You want to think about your son. Even sitting here, you can imagine your son or your daughter or your parents. So the subtle cannot be conditioned by the gross, cannot be held by the gross. It cannot, like the thoughts. So the body is gross, the mind is subtler. the emotion. So you can, you know, think about somebody with love at this moment, somebody you love. And the intellect is even subtler than the mind. The intellect not only knows the emotions, but intellect can plan, can, you know, think about the future and can come up with ideas which the mind cannot. So in order of subtlety, the body, then the mind, then the intellect, then subtler than that are the vastness or the unmanifest desires, and subtlest of all is that consciousness. It is not only subtle, but it is all pervading, and we'll talk about that a little more in the next verse. So being subtler, just as the body cannot condition the mind cannot condition the intellect, so even though we are, the Lord is within us, but it is not conditioned, it is outside and inside both. So he says, that's why it says, nirgunatvat, it has no qualities, it has no, the gross bodies cannot contain it. God is within us, without us, everywhere. So it is subtler than the subtlest. That's why he says, anoraniyam ahameva. I am subtler than the subtlest. Even subtler than space. Space, we think, is the subtlest. Okay, there is the solids, you know, the earth, then water, then fire, then air, and then space is subtler. So the consciousness is even subtler than space, even more pervasive than space. Even space is contained in that Lord. That's why in Purushottam he says, Tripad urdhva udayat purushana pado eha abhavat punaha. One part of him became this whole universe. Three quarters of it is still beyond this universe. That's how much he extends. Then, of course, obviously, if it has no qualities and it is the Supreme Lord, that we don't need much discussion on. We know that is the one Supreme Paramatma, that is this most noblest, the most supreme, the highest, avyaya, as we talked about. It is imperishable. It does not get destroyed because, again, it has no qualities, it has no properties. It is not made of a substance. It is not a substance. It's not like wood that can be burnt, or it's not like steel that can be bent, or it's not like water that, you know, can be evaporated. So none of these qualities apply. So it is imperishable. Avyaya, not only it is imperishable, it is avyaya, means unchanging. It cannot be changed. There cannot be any change in that. And that is the very important. You know, one might say, okay, it cannot be destroyed, but can it be modified? Like, you know, like you have a piece of clay. You know, you say, I cannot destroy the clay, but I can make it into a pot. Then I can break the pot and make it into a saucer, and then break the saucer, make it into a cup. But the Lord cannot be modified. You cannot take him and make him into this or make him into that. Actually, even the word him is actually wrong, because it is that substratum, the energy. So it is neither male or female. It is the support of this whole universe. Imperishable, neither acts nor is tainted. So this, again, we'll talk a little more in the next verse. But what do we mean by it doesn't act? It doesn't do anything. What do we mean by that? What is the meaning of this word, that he doesn't do anything? Even last week we had talked about, it said here, akartaram sa pasyati, one who sees that prakriti kriyamanani sarvasha. Prakriti is the sarva karmanani. Prakriti is the doer of all the karmas, but that self or the consciousness is the non-doer. Yav pasyati sa pasyati, one who sees that alone knows the truth. So then how can the whole universe be created? And how is this whole universe being held? You know, the law of gravity, they say that came from the Lord. And all the planets are held in place. And the plants are growing. And then the fish are swimming. And flowers are blooming. And the seasons are changing. And the sun is moving from the north to the south. Actually, the earth is tilting. So how is all that happening if the Lord is the neither actor nor it is tainted. So what they say is that the Lord himself does not act, but in his presence everything is happening, everything is going on, everything is functioning. Like electricity itself does not do anything. Electricity is absolutely the non-doer, but in the presence of electricity, the fan is moving. Now the electricity does not say, I am moving. Electricity will say, oh, I am so tired, you know, all the fans in the world, I am moving. No, electricity is not moving. Electricity is providing the energy, and using that energy, we make the fans move, and then we make the lights light, and then we make the air conditioners cool, and we make the heaters heat. But electricity itself does not do anything, and electricity itself does not change. It is avyaya. There is one electricity, protons, neutrons, electrons, the electrons, which are there, and which is there all over the earth. Anywhere in a world you go, whether you go to India or whether you go to South America, it is that same electricity, you know, from either generated from water or from steam or from coal. But that electricity is one. It is unchanging. It is unconditioned. And the electricity is not affected by the quality of the bulb. As we had talked last time, if the bulb is brilliant, clean, the light will be clean. If the bulb is old, dirty, cracked, covered with dust, then the light. But the electricity is not the electricity's fault. Electricity said, it is not my fault if one bulb is giving light and one bulb is not. That is the quality of the bulb. So similarly, the Lord says that the kind of individual we are does not, it depends on our own vastness, our own qualities, our own tendencies, our thoughts, our emotions. The Lord is not to blame. If I have a lot of evil tendencies and negative thoughts and my consciousness is covered by a lot of arrogance and anger and greed and jealousy and hatred, then the light of consciousness emanating from me will be very dim. If we see a person who is, you know, very angry and very hateful, and then you don't even want to be in that person's presence because there is so much negative energy. You say, is this the same, you know, is the Lord in this one too? It's hard sometimes to see that divinity. But that same divinity is there, and then you see a Mahatma or you see Swamiji's and all who come here, and when you are in their presence, you feel so much peace, and they are radiating so much knowledge and so much love and compassion. So it is that same Lord who is not working but providing the energy, and depending on your vastness, on your desires, depending on your ideas, your emotions, or your actions. So they say that everything in this chart is not the Lord. It is the world, it is the universe. So the Lord is neither the vasanas, he's not the body, he's not the mind, he's not the intellect. Then the Lord is not even the ego. You know, we say, I am the ego, but he's not the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, the ego. And all the objects, emotions, and thoughts. So everything in this chart is not him, just that one consciousness. So everything that is happening because of prakriti, because of nature, because of my qualities. But the Lord himself is beyond qualities and is neither affected nor tainted. It is not contaminated. That's why in the next verse, Sri Krishna will explain this point a little more. It does not mean that in Hitler that the consciousness is bad, and in Mahatma Gandhi it is good, or in Shankaracharya it is good. No, that consciousness is not affected by the qualities of the individual. It's not tainted, it is not contaminated, it is not affected, and remains unblemished, remains pure, totally pure and unaffected by what is happening. The individual is affected. You know, depending on my good or bad actions, the law of karma will apply to me and will apply to everybody. Nobody is free of that. No matter how powerful you may be the president of the United States, you may be the king of England, you may be the pope of Rome, But if you have your good and bad karmas, you have to undergo the karma phala. The result of the karmas, good or bad, are given to everybody based on their activities, based on their actions. But the consciousness within the Pope or within the Queen of England or the King or wherever is the same, is unaffected. And this idea that this consciousness is indescribable also comes from the Upanishads. The Upanishads say that no words can describe him. So they say, well, then why are you talking so much? You know, you should become quiet. Since 11 o'clock, you have been on and on. So well, that is the language is the only medium. See, the rishis in their infinite compassion, you know, wrote all these Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads, and then great, you know, prophets and Mahatmas like Swami Chinmayananda and all interpreted them for us. So what I speak is mostly what Swami Chinmayananda has written in the book, in that green book you have, and also I listened to his tapes. So most of the ideas I have obtained from him. So in their infinite compassion, these rishis and mahatmas give us these indicators so that which indicate how to find that truth. See, the truth is indescribable, but it requires very subtle thinking. It requires subtle thinking. Words cannot express it. You cannot, by words, write down what God is. You cannot describe him in your speech. You cannot even think in your thoughts. You say, well, then if I cannot talk, if I cannot describe, I cannot think, then what do I do? So the scriptures tell us that in your silence of your prayer, in the silence of your meditation, when your mind has become very quiet, very subtle. See, a subtle intellect needs a lot of purity of mind. If your mind is impure, if your mind has a lot of vasanas, a lot of selfishness, anger, greed, jealousy, sorrow, misery, then your mind will not be pure. The mind has to become pure. You have to make your mind pure. Fill it with love and compassion and kindness and charity and sharing. And slowly, slowly, the mind that becomes less selfish, less arrogant, slowly that mind becomes quieter. Why do I have many thoughts? Because I want, I desire, I want to possess, I want more, I want more, I want this, I want that. And the mind is constantly chasing after objects because of the unfulfilled vasanas. So we have to simplify our life. The Mahatmas, you look at them, you know, Swami Tejomayananda, he's the worldwide head of the Chinmaya mission. There are more than 300 centers reporting to him. Some of them are 5 times, 10 times bigger than this center. And when Swami Tejomayanandaji travels, he has one small bag. He doesn't have any security, no, you know, bulletproof car or nothing. You know, so many hundreds of thousands of devotees. One small bag with 2 clothes. One he's wearing and 2 he's packing. That's all he has. He'll have his clock, his watch, and that's it. And, you know, maybe some toiletry articles, and that's all. That's all he possesses. The head of the worldwide head of the mission, absolutely fearless. He travels everywhere. He just travels in the plane and, you know, like that. So if you can simplify your life, reduce your desires, reduce your wants, and say, I have enough now. I don't need to go to the mall and just waste my time in getting more. I have enough clothes. I have clothes that I haven't worn for last 1 year. I'm sure all of you have in your closet clothes that you haven't worn yet. So why do we need more clothes? Why do we need more jewelry? Why do we need another car? Why do we need to change our car every 3 years? You have a good car, keep it for 10 years. So slowly reduce your desires, your desire for money, for power, for possessions. And as you reduce your desires, the mind becomes quieter. And a quiet mind and a subtle intellect, in that quiet mind, when you sit and contemplate, then that truth will shine. The Lord that is within us cannot be described, but by subtle thinking can be experienced as me. This consciousness is me, is not separate from me. And that is the fundamental truth of the Upanishads. The Upanishad thunders, Tattvamasi, you are that consciousness. Shvetaketu, the teacher tells him, and then the student understands, I am that. But that can only happen when your mind is pure, reduce of desires, and reduce your thoughts. Because too much thinking, you know, especially what we are doing, we are all the time texting and emailing and, you know, multitasking and all those things. They're all bad because they stimulate the mind to do too much. You know, at one time, nowadays you watch on TV, there's the main show coming, then there is a picture in picture, and then on top there is the stock quotes. We are watching that also, what happened to my... And then at the bottom, there is the latest news. So four things on one TV. Why you need that? Unnecessarily, your mind is thinking about four things. So they say, Naina Patel is not here, but if you listen to her, she talks about mindfulness. Do one thing at a time. Where you are, focus on that. If you are with a person, focus with that person. You know, I am with her. If you are in a situation, do one thing at a time, reduce your thoughts, reduce your, you know, we think that, oh, this person can multitask. He is very brilliant. He can talk on the phone and he can email and he can be driving. You know, people do 3-4 things, and I also do that, so I'm not free. And that is not good, because what that does is stimulates your mind. So quieten your mind, do one thing at a time. Eknath Ishwaran always says, single-pointedness, do one thing at a time. And in that quiet mind, when the mind is very subtle, this consciousness comes through. So this is a very practical verse which tells us how to reach this, the Lord. How to reach the Lord. Lord is not only in the temple, church or mosque, not only in heaven and everywhere above the clouds, but is in my heart. And through the silence of meditation, you can reach him, but you have to purify your mind. Purify, purify, purify. That is the number one thing. Purify your mind, reduce your thoughts, reduce your desires, reduce your negativities, and the Lord will automatically appear. He's already there, but all he is looking for a clean heart where he can manifest. See, the Lord is there everywhere, but in a dirty place, he doesn't want to stay. He has to. He, poor guy, has no choice. He has to stay. Even in a criminal, he said, I have to be here. I can't leave him. But at least we have to clean our heart, so that just as when a guest is coming to your house, you know, how we clean the room and the family room, remove all the papers, organize them, put them away, clean the, you know, get it vacuumed. So clean your heart, because the Lord will come as a guest. So make him welcome so that he feels welcome. You know, a guest, if they come to a dirty house with shoes and everything, what is this? You know, this is not the place I would like to live. So make your heart a worthy place for him to live. That's why he says, Sharirastha, he is there in every one of us, but not affected. Then one just very quick point I wanted to clarify. Swami Chinmayananda also talks about, we always talk about good soul and bad soul, and may his soul rest in peace. The word soul has been very misused. See, there are two interpretations of soul. One is, soul means the jivatma, the individual. They say he's a very good soul, or he's a good, bad soul. That is the jiva. It is the vasanas, mind and intellect, the desires, emotions and thoughts that decide whether a person is good or bad. It's not the body. The body, we all have the same body. The consciousness is the same in us. What makes me good or bad is my desires, my emotions and my thoughts. So that is called jivatma. That is the jiva. And sometimes people say, may his soul rest in peace. That what they are talking about is the jiva. But a lot of times, soul refers to the Atman, the consciousness. You know, the Atma also is translated as soul, the Atma. But that Atman, that consciousness, is neither good nor bad. None of the qualities apply. So you have to be very clear when you are saying, they say, na, oh, Bhagwan, uski Atma ko shanti de. Now that Atma is, if you are considering it as the Om, as the immutable, then it is always peaceful. You know, the Lord is always peaceful. So you have to be very clear. Are you referring to Jivatma or Paramatma? Are you referring to the individual ego, or are you referring to the total consciousness, which is also called as Atman? That's why the terminology has to be very clear. When you say Atman or Paramatma or Brahman, then you are talking about the totality, which is one. Atma is the one, Paramatma is the total, but they are all one. And when we are talking about the individual that died and his soul went to heaven or hell, then we are talking about the Jiva, the Jivatma. So it just has to be very clear, because people confuse the two terms, and then they, you know, so I thought I'll just spend a little minute. So distinguish between the limited soul, the ego, and the immutable total consciousness, because people use the same word interchangeably for both. You know, that they say, oh, the soul never perishes, like in the second chapter, Krishna says, you know, fire cannot burn it. Atman is indestructible. Fire cannot burn it. Water cannot wet it. You know, the weapons cannot burn it, cannot destroy it. What he's talking about is the total consciousness that is in every one of us as life, as God's presence. So this verse kind of gives us a little guideline of how we can approach and reach this divine consciousness, the Lord within. Any questions? Any comments? Well, they are also qualities. They are also descriptions. They are all indicators. Just as you call it beginningless, you call it imperishable, you call it indescribable, all that. So truth is the one that gets closest to defining him, but even that is a word. So these are all indicators. You can, you know, say it is immutable, it is indescribable, it is all-pervading, it is permanent, it is unchanging, it is beginningless, it is truth, it is love. These are all indicators that indicate that one. But it is still, love can change, you know, like you love somebody today and then tomorrow you see him in court, you know. I can't live without him, and then after 5 years I can't live with him, you know, just the OUT changes, and the same, you know. So love changes, truth also changes, you know. Something that was true, like people believe that the earth is flat, now they know the earth is round, and they were totally convinced. So everything is relative. Whatever we consider is our description is relative, but they all indicate, yeah, the Lord is very compassionate, he's very loving, he's very kind, he's the truth, it is a reality. That's why they say he's Sat, Chit, and Anand. Sat means existence, truth, reality. You know, it is always there. So even Sat, Chit, and Anand, Sat means permanent existence, Chit means all-knowing, Anand means all bliss, infinite. They are also qualities of that. We are attempting to describe that which is indescribable, but actually no words can describe him. That's why they say Sanskrit is the most subtle language, which gets closest. That's why they say Sanskrit is the Dev Bhasha, that the gods in heaven, they talk in Sanskrit. And that is the most subtle language that gets closest to the truth. And that's also the mother of all the languages. That's what we believe. But it still cannot describe. Even the books cannot. Even the Gita written by, told to us by Krishna himself, the Lord himself, still is not adequate to describe that truth.
So which person dies, which layer the vasana and the trans, it's a subtle layer that.
Right. Yeah, well, many gods are, again, in his infinite mercy. If I say love one infinite, total, formless entity, you say, I don't know what he looks like. Like Uddhav, you know, when the gopis were in so much love with Krishna, and Uddhav was a believer in Vedanta, you know, God is formless, all-pervading, permanent, and also he told them, he came and talked to them. He said, look, and Krishna had left Gokul, you know, and gopis were crying because they were missing him. He said, you don't need to worship that Krishna. He's just a form. You need to worship that formless Brahman. That is the real one. He had studied Vedanta from some teacher. So they said, Uddhav, please tell us, where does this formless live? What does he look like? He said, we have seen Krishna and we love him with our heart. We know what he looks like. We have held him in our arms. We watched him grow as a little child. And when he played the flute, we danced a ras around him. And he's so loving and so beautiful. That is whom we love. We don't care about this formless. You can keep him with you. He said, you can keep this formless. He says, and then he says, we have only one mind. You know, he says, you need to turn your mind to this formless. He said, ek man hai, wo gayo sham sang. I have one mind, and then Krishna took it. He already took it. I don't have a second mind. How can I love this formless? So the formless is, they actually changed him. You know, he then realized that these gopis' love for God is so much higher than my knowledge. So it's not that his knowledge was wrong, but knowledge has to be combined with love. Otherwise, pure knowledge becomes arrogance. You know, like he, and then pure love, if there's no knowledge, becomes fanaticism, that I love Krishna and all others are inferior. So these various forms have appeared for us to love, so that I can love Krishna, or somebody can love Shiva, or somebody can love Ganpati, somebody can love Mother Saraswati, somebody can love the Guru. So these forms are for us to love, to relate, and then through that Krishna, I reach that infinite consciousness. That's why Krishna in the 11th chapter shows his Virat Roop, that I am that the total universe is me. So the idea being that looking at that 5-6 foot or 5 foot form of Krishna, I can see the total consciousness in him. So that is the idea of having multiple gods, because just as you have multiple foods, you know, you like a different food and she likes different food. So, you know, it does not mean one food is better than the other. You wear different colors, you know, not everybody can wear a brown coat. You know, if everybody was wearing brown, this would be a very boring room. So there are different gods for us to have variety. But what they say is pick one that you love, Ishta Devta. Pick one that you love and love him 100% with total love. And then through that one form, see the total consciousness. So that is the idea. And what was your second question? Oh yeah, who travels, yeah. So what happens is the body gets burnt or buried. Nothing happens to that consciousness. That is one, this vasana's mind and intellect is a packet. And that is called jiva. That is the subtle body. Subtle body also they call it shuttle body. Why? Because it shuttles from body to body. So this subtle body leaves. So when at the time the person dies, they say, no, iski atma chali gai. So atma means this subtle body, vasanas, mind and intellect leaves. And actually some people who are very observant, who are very advanced, they actually can see the body leaving. You know, those who are spiritually advanced, when they see a person dying, they see like a shadow, like a wisp, something going. That people have said that. I mean, I of course, you know, have not seen it. But those who are spiritually advanced can actually see a like a shadow or a form leaving that body. And once the body is incapable of supporting life, then that person, that subtle body leaves and then goes to different higher or lower worlds. They say there are 7 above and 6 below, 14 lok. 7 plus 1 plus 6, 14 worlds. So depending on the good and bad actions, it goes to the higher, and they are subtler and subtler worlds. It's not a place. It's not a location. It is a subtle experience. It is a subtle experience. It's like from dream to waking is a change of, not a change of place, it is a change of awakening, change of consciousness. So these are subtle states of experience where the subtle body experiences that. But it's not a location. It's not that it goes somewhere up or somewhere down. They are realms of experience, of awakening, and then the highest, of course, is that Om, that consciousness. So depending on its good and bad actions, there are subtle worlds of experience where it experiences its good and bad actions and then continues its journey. Then takes another body based on my desires and my karmas. If I have lot of, say a person is very poor and had lot of desire for wealth, then he'll be born in a rich household. If a person wanted to be an artist or wanted to be a singer and couldn't become one and had a very strong vasana desire, then in the next life he will be born in the home of singers where he can, you know, be trained or learn. So that's why Mozart by age 5, you know, was already playing, composing operas, because he had the, you know, previous birth. So the body, so the parents don't give birth to the child. The child chooses the mother's womb where he or she will enter, where the family, where his desires and his karmas can be fulfilled. So the child chooses the parents don't give birth to the child. And then based on my karmas, if I have done a lot of bad karmas, I might be born with, you know, Down syndrome or congenital malformations and all that. But then our job should not be to criticize, oh, this guy is malformed, so he must have done bad karmas, let him suffer. No, my job should be that this person is suffering, let me relieve his suffering. So that way at least I fulfill my duty, you know, to the world and to the Lord, so that we should have compassion for these people who are suffering.